Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. It's Thursday, 18th of May, 2023. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher. And today, it's a more intimate Cynic Weekly. I am joined by Christopher Sormani. Hello, Christopher. How are you?
Hello, Christopher. It's just us.
It's just us. Very intimate.
Intimate.
Alan Edgar is on holiday. He sends his regards. And I'll try to get a few people bowdies at the old Scott Brownie event at the Hydro. And just weirdly, just everyone else had something on. So it's just me and you. Hope that's all right, my man.
Don't you worry about that. Don't you worry about that. But we'll see if we run out of things to say. Be a 20-minute podcast.
Be a 25-minute podcast. Nah. Obviously we're going to talk about we're going to touch on the Rangers game from last week, and obviously we're a little bit out from there, so we got a little bit of perspective on that. There is some news we can talk about, and also we'll look ahead to St Mirren, and we also have plenty of questions, so thanks to everyone who got in contact with us and asked a question. We're going to open up with WhatsApp rumours. It's not on the rundown, Chris. You're looking at the rundown. But so I was sitting in the pub yesterday with our good friend Paul Carlin and Colin Kearney. And I basically got a message through, and it was a picture of Dermot Desmond with Ange Postecoglou and Mark Lawwell. Mm-hmm. And there was terrifying rumours flying around. Let's kind of talk through the kind of age of WhatsApp rumours. How did you receive that yesterday?
I think when you've seen, whenever you see Desmond over, you think, well, what's he doing here? Because normally he's walking about playing golf somewhere, wearing some sort of ensemble he was wearing yesterday.
Wild.
You know.
These rich guys love pink.
Aye, and they love tucking shirts into jeans and stuff like that. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Aye, so whenever he appears in the scene, it's normally for a specific reason. So you're assuming, you know, well, negative, because that's where we go. But, you know, either that, and then you turn around and go, well, positive, what are they going to announce? They're going to announce a new contract. They're going to announce a big bumper, you know, transfer budget for the summer. But then when you actually think about it, every chance that he came over for the Scott Brown thing tonight. Yeah. Desmond, I think, spoken well of Brown and had a level of relationship with him, I think, that he wouldn't have normally with football players. So it might just be that. But it might be that we're getting pure hunters and hunters a dosh for the transfer budget.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like, the rumours started flying. You know, social media, and we're going to talk a little bit about social media, but people put that picture up and then, the rumours run wild, like, yeah. Hulkamania. But, like, everyone started getting forward with all these, Hatate and Abada are definitely away. Kyogo might go as well. We're bringing in a top goalkeeper. And, I'm sure everyone has these. And then it starts talking about Lennox Town and all that. And do you know, it gives a shiver down the spine, because it just reminds me of that 2020 season when there was WhatsApp rumours every single day, completely throwing all different scenarios out there. But I know you mentioned it's probably the Scott Brown thing, right? More than likely is. Or it could be that he might just be in Glasgow for other reasons, for business reasons or whatever. What do you think it is?
Scott Brown. Genuinely, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean,
Jack is a new contract. People are talking about, like, a new contract and all that. So, like, people are saying Ange is going to sign a contract. And the reason I think that could be potential is Dermot Desmond loves to bum himself up, right? Mm. You know, we did a podcast at the weekend, Celtic Roulette, where we talked about Dermot Desmond, and we had a lot of negative things to say about him. But he loves to bum himself up. And so, if there is going to be a situation where Ange signs a new deal, he'll be sitting to the right hand of him, or he'll make a call. He'll make an interview about how he watched all the videos and he knew, even though it's a lot of bullshit. Like, so that's why I would say maybe 50-50, less than 50-50.
Potentially, and he's not daft with money, obviously, and giving Ange a multi-year contract instead of the rolling one-year contract protects us should somebody come in and try and sign him, much like Same with Rodgers. I mean, what did we get? £9 million for Rodgers?
12, I think it was.
Well, you know, whatever it was, including his backroom staff, obviously. Aye, it's just Ange and nobody's going to want our backroom staff. But if they give him that deal and it's worth significantly more money, that'll be why it is. It's to protect us should he continue on the current trajectory and then get picked up elsewhere. So you could see him in that scenario sitting next to him, you know, Tash, all that, giving it all a patter about
How he found him and all that sort of stuff.
But it'll be the Scott Brown thing, Chris. It'll be the Scott Brown thing.
Got another small piece of information. This is insider. This is inside baseball. Lorenzo, our friend Lorenzo, he is travelling somewhere for work. And he was on a plane today. And Steve McManus, Darren O'Day, and again, Mark Lowell, we're on the plane.
Some sort of youth game?
No, I think they're going to Scott Brown's thing as well. I just think they were having a kind of spin around turn journey. But no, they were, they were in there. I don't know. But I'll try to start a WhatsAppy rumour. I'd like it to kind of start going viral.
A recorded WhatsApp rumour.
Yeah.
I'll
clip it and put it out as a clip.
See, it's a wee bit early, this is like post-Scottish Cup final stuff, isn't it? You know, where you're trying to fill a podcast up and you're going, you know, Art Lowell was spotted in a cheesemonger's.
No, he definitely was. Lorenzo was sitting beside him on the plane.
Aye, but right now you're thinking, there's still games of football to be played. Do we need to be invested in this bollocks?
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more because, you know, the rumours will fly. And actually, in some of the news segments, Ange kind of touches on that. So there's some interesting quotes from him. There's interesting quotes from him from the Player of the Year, or Player/Manager of the Year Awards, and interesting updates today. So we'll get to that. Opening question is from Brian, not McManus. Is there anything constructive that we can take away from Saturday's defeat and news going forward? So let's kind of have a focus on Saturday. You were on the reaction. I thought you, Graham, and Boud handled it really, really well. I think there was a lot of kind of... Yeah, I think that's the thing about the reactions. We record the reaction to every single game, and it usually straight after. And tensions can run high in regards to if it's been a negative result. We've not had a lot of that this season, so it's been quite good. But is there anything we can learn?
Just going back, you're talking about reactions when it's been a negative performance. I've kind of earned my stripes with that in the COVID season, kind of every time I was on. But anyway,
yeah,
that was torture. What can we learn? Well, you would learn that you can't be complacent. You can't phone the performance in, which I think a lot of players did. I think what constructive, I don't know if you would call this constructive in terms of taking away from it, you've probably cemented in your head that there's a few players who just aren't good enough to play for Celtic. That might be harsh. There might be some, I think, that others would disagree with. But...
Who?
Right. Burnaby and Ralston, I think. Bottom line.
I'd agree.
Abada, that probably would be more questionable. And I know I'm not... I'm kind of... I've been fairly consistent and
we're both quite cool on Abada. Yeah.
And I've because of his goal scoring and his assist record, you've kind of been kind of ended up with egg. I've been ended up with egg in my face a few times in terms of writing him off and then he comes back. But any time I've done that recently, he's not. And I keep expecting him to get better because there's a player there. He's some big moments in the Celtic strips. Crucially, he's had goals against them, which always curries favour with the support. But for me, now, I mean, don't get me wrong, the ball that he played through to O for the chance that he should have scored was fantastic. But then after that, Abada's one of those players that if he's not scoring, he's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Commons was a bit like that, for instance, and Rodgick could be a bit like that. The problem is, for Abada, is that they had far more bigger moments that meant that you forgot about the rest of the quality of their work, whereas Abada's not having enough of them. He is young, but for me, I just don't think he's going to kick on in the way that a lot of people do. And when we're talking about the Champions League, we're looking at a squad, we're talking about what we want to do next year. So you looked at that game on Sunday, as much as domestically, sorry, more so for the Champions League as domestically, and you're thinking we're going to need to do an awful lot better in certain positions, and I think Abad is one of them.
I mean, if you look at that squad that we have just now, and, you know, essentially, if you didn't add to it, but even if we lost a couple of players, I think domestically we'd still be fine. Now, obviously you need depth and all that, but I think that domestically we've got a core group that have had won the league two times in a row. They kind of, you know, it's like that whole idea of it being like a muscle winning and stuff. And when you're on that kind of any sort of bump in the road, you go back to that winning mentality. But I agree, and, you know, someone like Abada, who has had big moments at points over his two seasons at the club, sometimes it's just time for a player to kind of move on, and that's something we're going to talk about. And I don't think, I sometimes think that, you know, as a support, we kind of, and we can talk about this a little bit as well, we become quite kind of split down the middle. Like, social media just is, you can't have a conversation on social media, right? That's why we aren't on as active on social media as we once were, because we save all the kind of points of view and opinions for the podcast, essentially. But I think it's okay for a player to end, like, his cycle to be coming to an end at this club. And I think by saying we'd like to sell Abada, it's not because we think Abada is a terrible player or we think, you know, he can't pull something back, but just because it's time. How often have we kept a player too long?
Yeah, but it's slightly different for a guy like Abada with his age. For me, the issue is,
yeah, okay,
he's got, you know, he's got more levels to go through. He's young. He's going to get better. I'm still waiting to see it. I'm waiting to see that happen. Yeah. And that might be unfair, right? I mean, and I know some folk out there will disagree. What is he, 21?
Yeah, I'll quickly check that.
He's 21. He's had phenomenal success in terms of goals and assists. But just for an Ange team, you need to do more than that.
He's 21, yeah.
So 21. You need to do more than that. You know, you talk about the work rate. You've seen Jota, even at the weekend, right? Jota wasn't good, right? Nobody was good at the weekend. But you had a lot of... what you've seen is a lot of endeavour from him,
yeah,
right? Whereas Abada, I'm just... the contribution he makes out with those moments is just... it's just not there. And I don't see him getting better. He's spending... I mean, I think he's the most substituted player or the most sub...
he's the most substituted player of any player ever in Celtic's history of a season.
There. So that, I think that speaks volumes. And I don't want to focus too much on him because there's plenty of blame to go around and there's plenty of discussion to talk about, you know, other players. But for me, that's a side of the park. You know, we quite often we'll maybe shoehorn Jota into the right where I don't think he's as effective. And that's because I think the options are light there. He is ostensibly the headline, supposed right-sided forward for that front three, and he doesn't guarantee the start. Yeah. So yeah, for me, I think that we need to do a lot better there.
I think for next season, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but I think that front three needs freshened up. I think that Maeda is a terrific player. I think Jota is probably one of our best players, one of my favourite players, and Kyogo's Kyogo. But, you know, looking beyond that, that right-hand side's got to be it's got to be like a kind of priority.
Has to be. And then you also want to temper yourself a wee bit because it's dead easy to overreact to that result in terms of throwing everybody under the bus and stuff like that. But what it did do is it highlighted that lack of squad depth. I mean, we're talking further up the park, and I would tend to agree. We do need more there, certainly on the right. There's a question mark about through the middle as well, because, again, O's young. We don't know enough to make a proper judgment on him. But see, going further back, those fullbacks, wow.
Is that your big thing? Is that what we can learn? Is that your takeaway, that fullback drop-off is really poor?
I think we already knew that, but this underlines it four times or something. The fullbacks are so integral to this team in terms of playing inverted and assisting the midfield. Taylor and Johnston, I think people are fairly happy with, right? You'd still... there still might be a question about what about the Champions League there. But then even the drop-off domestically, and then if you're even considering the Champions League, Burnaby and Taylor just aren't at it. Burnaby, obviously, technically is better than Ralston, but positionally, the amount of time he wants on the ball, his sloppiness, his carelessness, it just seems as if, is this wee guy that was really good at football but never actually learned
the fundamentals?
The fundamentals, yeah, or any sort of tactical awareness. You know, it was a wee guy that ran about the playground and nobody could get the ball off of him. But then when he was brought into a kind of a proper team, it was like he doesn't know what to do. And Ralston's Ralston. I mean, everybody kind of knows he's a very limited football player. I think the praise he got largely was because
we were shocked at how the level he went to.
Yeah, we were shocked at the level he went to compared to where he was. But that was never that was always a very low bar in terms of what we knew Ralston was capable of. So it's no shock there. But
it's really
quite a big weakness, I think.
See Burnaby, he looks to me like a guy who, no, I think there's talent there. I think it's going to take a lot longer to kind of sharpen him up, I guess. And maybe, you know what, maybe he's not a fullback, you know, because he looks to me like a really good attacking player who was kind of like, you know, we'll play you a fullback and see how you do there, son, because maybe you don't have enough going forward. Would you see with Burnaby? Right, we know with Tony Ralston. Tony Ralston said, what, two loan moves from Celtic? He was at Dundee United, he was at St Johnstone. Both of them were not successful. Mm. He comes back, we all write him off. One of the first things that happens, and one of the last things that happens of that horrible season is that he signs a contract, and everyone kind of winces. But then last season, he performed really, really well. He was vital. And I think this is something, you know, he can take to the bank, that he was vital and important in a number of games, and he performed really, really well.
Yeah.
But his time's probably up in regards to challenging to be the first team right back, right? Burnaby, however, would you, if you could get, okay, let me ask you this question. If you could get your money back for Burnaby tomorrow, would you take it?
100%.
Okay. Okay.
But, and then,
Would you not put him out on loan, see how he does on loan, or would you just take the money back?
I'd take the money back if he offered me that right now. The thing about Lalonde as well, where does he go? Young guy, remember, he's obviously came over here and he's not had, you know, he's had his troubles, you know, obviously with the drink driving thing that came up. So where would you put a guy like that in loan? You know, because
that's a good point.
He's over here, far away from Argentina. You're not going to send him back there. Are you going to loan him out in Scotland? Maybe. England, it's just a strange one in terms of he's a young guy and you know, in terms of building that support around him. It'd be difficult to place him anywhere, especially somewhere where he's going to aid his development. Do you know what I mean?
I also think if you sign a guy like that, you bring him in. I think if you have him play first team football and then put him out on loan, I think that sends a message. Now, that's not to say that he can't come back and be successful, but to me, I would not want to send a player out on loan who would be in and around the first team squad and then to take him out of that, because, you know, if he goes to if Burnaby went to somewhere in the Scottish Premier League, where would you send him, right? You'd probably want to send him to the team that finishes third, because there's a chance, well, it's not a chance, they will be guaranteed European football next season, right? And mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's hard to judge a player playing for Aberdeen in, you know, the Europa League or the Conference League, right? Because they'll probably get gubbed. But at the same time, that's European football, you know, challenging for third again. But, you know, is he going to develop? I don't know. I think the Burnaby one's a bigger question than any other ones, because I think Ralston, I think they might keep him, but I would like another right back in. I'm not completely convinced by AG. I like him. I think he's a good player. I think he's got qualities. But is he as good as Juranovic? I don't think he is overall. And again, that's not a criticism, because I think Juranovic was a, like, almost top tier player. Could he become as good as Juranovic? I just feel he doesn't have the guile.
Yeah, I mean, he's got...
It's not to say I don't like him, because I really do.
I think he excels at the best bits of Ralston, right? And I don't think he's as good a football player as as Juranovic was. I think in a battle you would want him. I think he's much better than Ralston, just to be clear on that. Much, much better. I think, though, the strengths that you see with Ralston, I think that you've got them with Johnson. I think him and Taylor are, I don't think there's much between them. Now, some people would argue that Taylor's better for the system, and I wouldn't disagree that. But in terms of what their attributes are and the level that they're at as fullbacks, you would say, I'm happy with both of them, certainly domestically. Can we do better? On both sides. Taylor's dependable. Very dependable. He's made a lot of people kind of, you know, eat their own words over the years, just in terms of how he started, where he came from, and where he is just now. And he's a very good football player. But can we do better?
Is there any
And I think you say the same about Johnston.
Is there any position? I'm not kind of diverting away from that point, but is there any position where we can't do better?
Well, you that can never be your mindset.
I know. I'm just like off the top of your head. Like, so I reckon, you know, someone like McGregor, I don't think we could do better than him, just in regards to how he performs, his consistency, the position he plays. He's the captain. I think that's fine. Hitati, I think when he's on his game, he's legitimately one of the best midfielders we've had in quite a while. So as you say, you can do better in every position, but like there are certain positions where you're like, well, they're fine. I think Jota, you look at him and you think he can play left and right, he's better on the left, but could we do better than him? In terms of his profile and where he's came from and the money we spent on him and the money we could potentially, I don't think you could. Carter Vickers is probably the same. Everyone else, I think, and that's not to be disrespectful to any other players, I think everyone else you could potentially do better. And it's, for me to say it wouldn't be that hard to do better is not what I mean. But what I mean is, with all the kind of analytics and, you know, scouting and, you know, all that, we're in a better position than we were before. And Ange knows exactly what he wants from people. Yeah. So, just a quick one. Look, the Rangers game was a fucking disaster. There's absolutely no doubt about it. We did a reaction, which is available at thecynic.co. If you are interested in daily Celtic podcasts, throughout the summer, we don't stop. Check out thecynic.co. There's currently a free Celtic FC Women podcast that we produce every week. It's available on the kind of feed that you're listening to now. So if you want to go back and get the build up, we'll touch on that towards the end of the show. But it was a disaster. I don't think there's a lot we can learn from it. In regards to someone like O, so looking ahead, Kyogo won Player of the Year, and we can talk about a little bit about that. Kyogo is someone who has scored over 30 goals in this season, right? O, to me, is a lot rawer than I thought he was going to be, which is fine. But the idea of going into an actual competitive game that we need to win next season, Kyogo suspended or he's unavailable for whatever reason and O starts in his place, does not fill me with any level of confidence. What about you? And that's not to criticise the young man. I just think, see, the he's missed a couple of opportunities. You know, the header against Motherwell, I was right in front of it. I wasn't sitting in my normal seat. I was right in front of it. And it was just an absolute sitter. And, you know, people turn around. And I've been saying it all week. I went for pints with my dad on Sunday. And I was like, he was like, oh, should I finish? And I was like, no, he's young. You know, he's unlucky. But, you know, I have been thinking about it. It's like, you have to finish that. You have to finish that chance.
Yeah, he should have scored. He'd made the right choice, he just executed it poorly. I think Sunday, was it Saturday? Sunday, I can't even remember. Saturday. I think the performance of the midfield in particular was so poor that I tend to give him a little bit of a pass just because the service wasn't there and, you know, there wasn't much kind of fed into him. I do share your concerns, though, just in terms of what I've seen of him. You've seen glimpses of talent. You've seen a couple of goals from him. I've even seen him seen the game that we played against Rangers at Celtic Park when Burnaby inexplicably played it back to nobody. He held the ball up really well and laid it off to him. So there's wee things like that, you know, aspects to his game where you're thinking there might be a player there. But overall, I'm looking at him and thinking, if Kyogo goes out and we've got big games and you're coming in to deputise, am I confident? No, I'm not. I'm not. And that's maybe not fair to expect too much from a young guy at that age to come in and take on that mantle. But it does lead you now to start to think, do we need another centre forward in there? Now, there was rumours when he came in, obviously we were going to sign Cho.
That's right, yeah.
Then we got O. And then there was a rumour that we were going to go back for Cho to join O. I'm just doing that because
it's good. You know, it works well.
So it might be that...
Do you think we'll go back for Cho?
I don't know if we'll go back for Cho, but it may be that. That's entirely possible that he was our target, the main target at that time. But the club were unwilling to let him go and we said, okay, we'll see you in the summer and we'll bring him in. And then you're a lot more relaxed about O, getting some game time, developing and things like that. Assuming that Cho can step up to the mark, that might be part of the plan.
But see the issue, the problem with a club like Celtic, right, is you're fighting for every trophy. So you know, we're on the verge of doing the treble, and it's going to be, you know, the next couple of weeks is going to be, I think, glorious. Hopefully, I wouldn't want to be disrespectful to Dunfermline because they've earned their right to be in the Scottish Cup final, and I'm not writing anyone off because
Dunfermline.
Not Dunfermline, fucking Inverness. Because you know, you get to Scottish Cup final, you know, you deserve the respect, I think, right? But, you know, hopefully, potentially, we could have a fucking really fantastic end of the season, right? Mm-hmm. But we're always fighting for those... trebles now seem to be almost an expectation. And the pressure of that coinciding with the Champions League. We're not a very good club. From a profile point of view, we're not a very good club at developing players.
No.
And that's to do with the pressure. And that's to do with the idea that you have to win every game. And that's to do with that. So what you would look at, last season, right, we played Morton and the Scottish Cup at home. Then we did two away games in the League Cup. So we didn't have a League Cup game at home this season at all. Okay. But my point is, I'm looking at these games and I'm thinking, okay, Morton at home in the Scottish Cup is the lowest level of opposition we really played, and we won 5-0. Are there any other games? Because you know, you could look at Ross County on a Saturday at 3:00. He doesn't really mix it up though. So my point is, I just the idea that we're going to someone like if we do bring in a second striker, let's say we brought in Cho, right? Mm. Cho was the guy. He was going to be challenging Kyogo. Let's say Cho comes in and he hits the ground running and he scores a couple of goals, maybe even in pre-season, maybe when we're on the South Korean tour or whatever, South Korean Japan tour, and he hits the ground running, right? You're not going to drop Kyogo. You're not going to drop Cho. So when does O play? Because I think we need another striker.
Mm.
So this is the thing, and that's the same with the youngsters as well. You're either good enough and you can come in and play, or you're not, we're probably not going to give you an opportunity.
The margin for error is so low. The League Cup's a perfect example, right? We've talked on this podcast, the weekly I'm talking about, for several weeks, talking about using it to blood youngsters and, you know, harking back to the days when Martin O'Neill did it. We went to Tynecastle and, you know, you had Maloney and Lynch and all that sort of stuff. The problem that we've got just now is, anything that involves Rangers, anything, even if we're not playing them, if we're playing them, that then becomes a massive game. And if we don't play them, we're handing them a trophy. That's what the fans would say. So see if we went and played a lot of youngsters against, pick a team, Raith Rovers, right, in a League Cup game, and we didn't win. It wouldn't be, oh, well, we lost that, but the reason why we lost that is we were blooding half a dozen youngsters.
From it and all that.
It would be, can I do that? They're going to win that trophy now.
No.
And it does come back to that whole feeling that we should win the treble every single time. Now, I'm saying that and you're talking about it rationally and thinking that would be a good idea, but let's be perfectly honest, it's only about, what, in theory, if you get to the final, four or five games anyway.
Yeah.
So even that's not a long-term strategy to start developing people, developing young players, sorry, but even that, is everything is so tense. You see the reaction to Sunday, and I'm reacting the same way as a lot of people, to an extent. You see the reaction to the defeat against St Mirren. All of this the stakes are so high because the margin for error is so low. Because you even see them, they've not dropped very many points either. Do you know? That's the thing. It's not like if we drop points, there was once upon a time, you know, and the Anil and the Strachan era, you knew that they would drop points at some point, and it was then about putting together a decent run before you. That doesn't happen now.
No.
It's just, you're talking records, points, totals, you're talking...
That's going to continue, I think, as well.
And all that sort of nonsense, and I think you end up becoming quite insular about it. But one of the things we do need to react to is they don't drop many points either, so these things become far more magnified. So you're right. Bringing players through is really difficult unless they are able to hit somebody like Tierney.
Yeah, generational talent and all that.
Come in, just take to it like a natural and kind of move on from there. Not a lot of players are like that. I can see how it's hard for us to develop. Then you get into conversations about the level of football that they're playing, you know, with the B-League and all that. So
the conference, we'll quickly touch on that, like the conference league that, you know, it's, I think, Celtic, Rangers and a few other teams in, I know, Queen's Park are applying for it to join it. And it's just not going to develop players. You take someone like Cho, let's say we get to a situation where O isn't necessarily getting a game week on week or whatever, you're going to stick him in the Conference League? Are you going to stick bloody Burnaby in the Conference League? What are they going to learn? Absolutely nothing. And what are our young players going to learn? Absolutely nothing.
And I mean, I think it all goes back, a lot of this comes down to money, obviously. You know, old-fashioned, the reserves. You know, you played in the reserves quite often than you were playing with. Like, for instance, say, well, it's different now as well because there's a lot more players on the bench, but let's say we were going back to the days when there was a reserve league and you didn't have as many players on the bench. A guy like James Forrest would be playing reserve football regularly. And if you're a young guy playing with somebody with the experience of James Forrest, you're learning a lot more. You're then playing against opposition teams who, okay, the quality of the players might not be there, but you would have all pros, you would have mixed with young guys, and you would learn the game, and you would maybe see. So I'm not saying that the reserve league was perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it was a better environment to try and learn a wee bit more.
Yeah.
That might be too simplistic, folk might disagree, but that opportunity was definitely there, and that, you know, they tried to replace that with the under 21 league and all this sort of stuff. That didn't work out because of money and stuff. And now you're in a position whereby you're playing non-league football, really. And
see,
it's a waste of time, man.
If the Colts were allowed to be in the Championship, right, and I know if you're a lower league, if your team's in the lower leagues and you listen to this, not that you would, but like people would be like, who the fuck are you to fucking tell us? And I totally understand that. But that's the only way I could see it working, if it was like the Championship and they didn't get promotion and all that sort of stuff. That's never going to happen. I mean, something needs to happen in regards to how that's going to work. But we'll come back to that, I'm sure, over the summer. Quick one on Kobayashi. You know, let's not write him off. But in terms of, if you think, you know, if you look at it as an audition, he didn't necessarily, you know, he's not getting a recall, is he? His agent's not getting a phone call saying you've got the part, you know?
Well, in I suppose you need to think about this in two ways. In context of the game, he was dreadful. Really dreadful.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can dress that up in any way. However, he's not played enough to make a long-term assessment on him, and we've just talked about how we're not particularly good at developing players, and they absolutely concede that. The idea of Kobayashi was one that I think a lot of the support, and I say the idea, you know what I mean, but that is
the profile.
The profile, yeah, that's a better way of putting it. A ball-playing centre-half, that's what we need. This side truly needs a ball-playing centre-half. We've talked about that, about the goalkeeper as well. In terms of bringing the ball out from the back, it's something that's sorely, sorely missing. The question mark over Kobayashi wasn't about his ability to play football, it was about his ability to defend. And you could argue, I don't think he was very good against Hearts either, and then you could argue that that was the stiffest test he came up against. Now, don't get me wrong, you can caveat it with, I don't think he was afforded much protection. McGregor, O'Reilly and Hatate were all very poor. you know, McGregor.
One of his worst games.
One of his worst games in a Celtic strip. So in terms of, you know, exposure and things like that, you can give him that. But the weakness for the second goal, I don't think he had a clue where he was for the first goal. It's a blot, a real blot on his kind of copybook in terms of his Celtic career so far. So,
but this is again, like, Ange Postecoglou, I think, is, you know, he's the type of guy who'll look at it and be like, oh no, you know, he'll watch him in training and he'll see the games and, you know, he'll go over the video analysis and all that. Like, he knows. I mean, he doesn't suffer fools gladly. And I'm not saying Kobayashi's a bad player or he's trying to hide anything, but ultimately, if he doesn't think you're up for it, you're probably not going to play.
Well, I don't think he'll play if the manager doesn't, you know, if he's came to that conclusion. Seeing the flip side of that, see if he believes in him and he thinks these are teething problems, he will play him.
Yeah.
And in many ways, you're going to have to trust the manager and his judgment on that. But in terms of sitting here, like me and you, thinking again about the Champions League next season, you're looking at that centre-half pairing, Starfelt, Carter Vickers, solid defensively, what do you call it, and domestically, in you know, the vast majority of games. But you need something else in there. You probably do need a football player at the back. That's what you'd ideally like to have. I think that would make such a huge difference. But you're now thinking you need to go out and find one, as opposed to hoping that that player could be Kobayashi. And it might still be, but you can only go on what you've seen of him. And
I think the other thing... The thing that worries me is, you know, Carter Vickers just had his surgery.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about going and buy one player, you may have to buy two. We might have to go and look at that central defence and say, okay, Starfelt, and another, and then another, because we don't CCV. It's not an injury. He's had surgery, right? Mm-hmm. So reactions to surgery can, you know, there could be setbacks. You know, I think people are of the idea that, like, it's kind of like Football Manager. He's out for 3 to 4 months and, you know, he'll definitely be back. It's going to take him time to get up to speed. It's going to take him time. Just, we don't know what his recovery is going to be like. So my worry would be that, you know, my worry would be that we don't bring anyone in, but, you know, we've been linked with this kind of Dutch centre-half. So it'll be interesting to see. We're going to do, on the weekend update tomorrow, it'll be myself and Christian Wolf, and we're going to do analysis and look at all the players we've been linked with so far, so we can kind of look into how they perform, what Christian's thoughts on are, what Christian's thoughts on them are, and how they kind of stack up in regards to stats and stuff. So we'll kind of go over all of that tomorrow. But we're obviously being linked with centre half stats thingy, although Ange just kind of made it clear that nothing's even close to being kind of thought of. So yeah, that just, I know that's a bit of a ramble, but I just worry from a centre half point of view that Carter Vickers might take longer to get back than we expect.
Potentially.
And I don't mean to be a downer, but it's a bit of a downer, but it's just, you know, that defeat really fucking annoyed me, man. Like,
it's magnified things we already knew.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, because what we're talking about just now is things that we've talked about for weeks and weeks, but they weren't all bunched together, and it wasn't with that non-annoyance of the result at the weekend. So, you know, we knew there was question marks over Bernabe's ability. We knew that Ralston probably wasn't up to it. We knew that Kobayashi hadn't been proven to be a capable defender, you know, and you can go and so on and so on. It's just that it all happened on the park, so you're talking about it all at the same time. So, aye. That's why we sound pure depressed when we're about to go for a fucking treble.
Listen, we've got plenty of... there's going to be so much joy over the next couple of weeks, don't worry about it. Question from Andy. If you had to choose just one position to upgrade in the summer, what one would it be and why? So just one position. Obviously, you know, goalkeeper is something that people say and look at in regards to Joe Hart for a number of reasons. We've mentioned the fullbacks, we've mentioned the whole defence. What's that one position for you, Chris?
Keeper.
Is it keeper, aye?
Aye. I don't think Hart covered himself in glory at the weekend either. I mean, the first one, is maybe unsighted if you're being kind, and there was certainly a lot of players not doing...
He did the old Bane, but had it break back into...
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as Bane doing that, but I did think when I seen it, my immediate reaction was, you could have got that further away. You could have got that further away from goal. You're maybe being kind if you said he was a bit unsighted with the players. Second one, you know...
It doesn't even make a move.
Now... I'm not saying he could save it, but I'd like to him to at least look as if he was trying to save it. And then the third...
It was like Craig Gordon at a penalty.
Aye. It was... I wouldn't lay the blame at him for the second one, but don't just stand there. And the third one, I think, was a bit of a rush of blood to the head, you know, and made it easy. Although, if you're pointing the... See, that there's folk that take greater blame than him for all three of the goals. But he doesn't cover himself in glory with any of them either. And we've talked about it. He came in, he did his a real turn.
It's like you have to caveat every time you say something negative about Joe Hart because people like him so much.
Aye, and there's a lot of... I mean, even Ralston, you know, you like Ralston. You like most of these players, but, you know, there's no room for sentimentality. So you say the caveat about Hart, but the bottom line is that we need better.
We need better. Question from Tony. Given the UEFA Champions League squad stipulation rules, who is, in an ideal world, would be our four association trained players? How many out of Bain, Taylor, Turnbull and McCarthy would we keep, and who would replace those that we don't keep? So Taylor?
Of course.
Of course. Would definitely be one. Turnbull, McCarthy. I'll read out some of the names of the kind of squad association trained. Obviously Taylor, Stephen Welsh, Anthony Ralston, David Turnbull, James McCarthy. These names aren't filling you with any sort of joy. Look, Cal McGregor and James Forrest are both there as well. I look at Scotland, I look at Scottish football, and I'm not... There's no one that really grabs my attention that we, you know, there's that young fullback at Motherwell who's doing really, really well. He's been linked with a couple of big moves. I've not seen enough of him to say whether I think he could, again, it comes back to the whole idea of you pitch him in, he has two bad games and you need another player or, you know, someone else that comes in to cover. That kind of, you know, the four association trained players, Bain, Taylor, Turnbull, McCarthy. McCarthy's probably going to go.
Yep. Bain should.
Do you think they're going to look for offers for Turnbull? Because his time probably would be limited next season. I don't know. Alan makes a good case about, you know, there is a player there and you could, you know, put him out on loan or whatever. Alan's not fully convinced that we can't get back. Alan's convinced maybe that we can get bang for a buck down the road in regards to a bigger transfer fee or him to do much. I'm not as kind of... sold on that. How are you?
I'm not convinced Turnbull has what it takes to be a big player for Celtic. I think he's too one-footed for a start. I think at the start of this season, Alan, I think, said, not to throw him under the bus because he's not here, there wasn't much between him and O'Reilly in terms of thinking right back to the start of the season. And I think I agreed at the time. I thought the competition would be between the two of them to say, like, go... used to go and grab this position. You know, and O'Reilly's not, you know, he's had his own kind of, you know, what's the word, crises of form. But Turnbull, for me, when he comes on the park, I'm just like, it's either the game's completely won and he's on for a run out, or if you're looking for a bit of a spark to change things, you're thinking, why are we bringing him on? And I don't know, there might be reasons for that. Maybe there's personal reasons. But this season seems like a fairly significant lost one for his development.
Yes.
In terms of him becoming a player that we thought he could, he probably had to show it this season. And now you're in a position whereby he looks as if he maybe doesn't want to be there. And that might be because he knows he's going or he's not getting the game time. I don't know. But for me, there's an overriding feeling that you kind of just cut your losses with him. And I know that's not how the business mindset works, so it might be that you're keeping them, and we might keep them because of that association trained kind of status and with the Champions League coming up. But even then, you're just thinking, he's just there. And that's a shame, because as much as I had kind of doubts over his, you know, him reaching the levels that some people thought he could, you know, it's, I didn't think he would be as, he would have made as little contribution this season as he has.
I think he's a guy who, honestly, I think would go down to like the English Championship, and I think he's perfect for that league in regard to if he plays for a good club, get promotion to the Premier League, you know, you never know. I like him a lot. I think he's got a lot of talent. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people saying, well, you should go to Serie A, but, you know, you kind of just...
Go to Serie A,
but I think there would be a lot of interest from the Championship next season. I think there would be interest from a lot of clubs, and I really like David Turnbull, but after the season he had last season in regards to being an integral part of the player, part of the team, even right up until, you know, January, February time, this season, you're right, see when he comes on, it's like, meh.
Yeah.
I never think he's going to, the game's wrapped up and he might get a goal or something, or it's kind of like a Hail Mary. We're like, well, we'll stick. And again, I think he's a talented footballer. I think he's got a lot going for him. I just think that the level has went up all over the park and people are starting to drop off because they maybe... Ralston's another example of someone who was so important last season who, you know, maybe time for him to move on.
And see, with Turnbull, I'm saying this and I'm talking negatively about him. He is the sort of guy who I wouldn't be surprised if he went to another club, like a Championship club, and was a, you know, a standout. And a lot of people would then turn around and go, why did we let him go and all this sort of stuff? But right now he's completely stagnant. And if you said to me that he's gone, I would kind of just shrug my shoulders.
I also think if you said to him he's going to be a main starter for Celtic next season, I think you would be like, well, what the fuck's happened? Where's the drop off? And when did Neil Lennon come back?
Are all the players left the football club?
But just on the kind of... the four association trained players. As I say, there's not a lot of players in Scottish Premiership that I look at and I think,
yeah,
you know, you'd be great for us. Even guys like, you know, we've got lots of players out on loan, like as like Scales and stuff. When I'm looking at him, thinking he played really well for Aberdeen this season, but he would not in any way challenge any of our either left back or centre back half to get into it. So,
no.
And he's performed well. So it's kind of like, you know, you look at that on balance, I think there's going to be a lot of... I think they'll probably keep Bain and potentially Ralston just because of the association train thing. So that's something we'll revisit.
I mean, you know, you were talking about people who say Turnbull should go to Serie A because we're obviously looking at the players that went to Serie A. And some of them will be guys that folk will think that we've missed out on. And then Hickey's subsequently moved to Brentford and he's been linked to be moves to... Man City and stuff like that. And obviously he was as a kid, he was given, you know, offered back to us on a plate and things. But that's the one of the problems that we've got, because there was games that he played against us for Hearts and I thought, you're never going to make it.
Same with Josh Doig.
Exactly. And I think that's what Hearts were able to do was allow him to play more football without that pressure, because obviously they seen what he was capable of. That's not really going to happen with us, you know. It's certainly more difficult for us. And then quite often by that time, it's too late. And, you know, even when he went to... Who did he play for in Italy? I keep forgetting.
He played for Bologna.
Oh, it was Bologna, that's right. Even when he went to Bologna, you know, you didn't go, oh, we really missed out there. You know, there was some talk about it and said we should have maybe taken a punt on him. But I don't think anybody was absolutely raging at the time. This is the problem we've got with the Scottish market. Some players will show great talent but aren't the finished article, and then we'll have they're rightly going to want some proper dosh for them, and then we're having a conversation about, you know, the value, risk to value ratio or whatever. So I would agree, this is right depressing. it's difficult trying to get Scottish players, you know, in, you know, that are needed in terms of the balance of the Champions League squad, but yeah.
Ange Postecoglou got manager of the year at the awards.
Well-deserved.
Well-deserved, of course. Just some quotes about that Angie came out with. It's fair to say that we are in the second year and things are embedded. That includes the core playing group, but that also gives you the opportunity to grow as a team. Part of that challenge will be more success you have, the more likely it will be that some of your players will move on. They get the attention of other clubs. We have to be ready to fill those gaps with players who have the ability to take us to another level altogether. He always talks about another level. And I think that's really interesting.
Great group.
I know you're going to, I was going to make another level. What was their hit?
Can't remember.
Oh, you know, if you're going to see a band, make sure you know their
band's a bit.
Yeah.
Bit of a stretch.
Another year, you get to the point where there is any great certainty about the team we are finishing with, the team we'll be starting the new season with. You'll always go into a window that there is going to be some uncertainty. I think we're going well. He's got a lot of quotes here. I've always found every year, and I've obviously been doing this for quite a while, there's always a different challenge. Last year was about building a team, building some belief, building some trust and faith in me, and we were doing that and trying within the context to try and have some success after the year with the football club. I was representing win trophies. I know that I couldn't do it another season like that. We had to have success. He talks about, you know, that was the kind of post the manager of the year award. And there's some interesting stuff in there, but a lot of it is just about, you know, driving to the next level and replacing players. Today at the press conference, he said, we've already started work. We are not close to signing anyone, but it's about identifying targets. It's a bit tricky at this point before the summer window because you are not really sure about potential departures as well. We are ready to go and are doing plenty of work in the background. I can assure you anyone mentioned at the moment is definitely not on our radar because we are not at that stage yet. It breeds confidence. But also, this thing nothing's guaranteed in life. Nothing's guaranteed in football. How many players going out in the summer? Because he's mentioned that players will go, right? What sort of number would make you uncomfortable? What sort of number do you think would be too big of a risk?
Not so much numbers. It's who is more. I mean, there's a lot of players that you wouldn't have a problem going. You know, Bain, Turnbull, McCarthy, Ajeti, Barkas. You know, there's a number of players that we've got either out on loan or in and around the fringes, and you're thinking, we could do without you, you know. So, in terms of numbers, it really still does come down to who. You're then starting to think, are we going to sell an asset, if you will, somebody who's going to bring in some cash for us? Now, assuming that there's a market out there for him, the one player that you would be most comfortable moving on for a couple of quid would be Abada. But the players who would probably be commanding the most interest would probably be Hitati, wouldn't it? Carter Vickers as well, I'd imagine. And when you're losing them, it's a big struggle to kind of try and replace them. Now, he's done really well in the markets that, you know, he's kind of shopped in. And we've kind of really benefited from his knowledge of the Japanese league, and obviously we've kind of dipped our toe in the South Korean league, bringing Owen. He seems confident of replacing players. I think there's probably a general doubt because in the past, when one of our big players has moved on, we've never really seamlessly switched. We've talked about wanting to do that and being able to do that, and maybe bringing in the replacement before the player leaves, but he's talking about it and you kind of believe him.
Yeah.
So you've just got to assume and hope that it's exciting in one way, but I'm very sceptical about it in another. It's like if you ask Ange if Rio Hitati moves on, you know, he'll go, we'll just need to bring in a player who's able to take us to an even bigger level. That sounds great. I'm just a wee bit sceptical because, well, I'm on a podcast called The Cynics. But it's going to be a hard task for him, but an Ange we trust.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing where, you know, I don't trust this board at all. But I trust him that he's going to get the best out of the board. He's going to try and get the best version of what this board can be by putting pressure on them, by saying, you know, I need this, I need that, and, you know, there's going to be hell to pay if I don't get it, sort of thing.
Well, yes, I do. And then obviously, Mark Law, don't know if you know, but it's Peter's son. He was operating at Man City, though, so maybe this is a bit of a, maybe I'm being too hopeful, but you're thinking maybe he'll bring in some of those contacts, maybe he's got ideas there in terms of our recruitment markets, and that's something that we can tap into. This is the first summer where we're going to try and do that, so it remains to be seen, but you, at the very least, you don't go in at a transfer window this summer thinking, this is going to be torture, which it really generally was under previous managers, like including Rodgers. You know, it was like, well, we need this player for this position, and you'd be sitting all summer waiting on it, whereas you're a wee bit more confident just now.
Did you see Cifuentes, the player that was linked with us in like 2015, who's now been linked with Angels? Your man Fab Romano was like, "Oh, it's all done. Don't you worry about that. On we go." And he responded by saying, like he retweeted the one who went, "No, it's not. Rangers are a small club, and I'm not going today," which I thought was hilarious.
It was a fake profile.
Ah, that blue tick.
You've fallen for it.
I've fallen
He's
for it.
He's done you. Musk has done you.
I'm embarrassed. I've embarrassed myself in front of T-Bone. I bow down to... That just shows you. Like, you see a blue tick and you're like, oh, even... Like, okay.
It was amusing, though. But I think it was a... if you look down, there was content from what the account used to be, and they'd obviously just changed the name, so...
Well, do you know what?
Hats still, off. Still funny, but...
Aye, hats off.
Let's pretend it's real.
Aye, hats off to you, pal. In regards to the game of the weekend, Player of the Year awards. Caitlin Hayes got it for, she's the Scottish Women's Player of the Year. She's been absolutely magnificent. She's fully deserved it. Kyogo Furuhashi, mm-hmm. Happy with that?
Can't argue with it. Do you want me to?
No, I don't. That's fine. He scored hundreds of goals and he's pure heavy minted. So, yeah, I think he deserves it as well. I know a lot of people were talking about Hatate and stuff, and I think Hatate's had a great season. But, yeah.
These things always lean towards forwards. So
always lean towards goals, don't they?
Yep. Same with player. I mean, you always see Barcelona and the Ballon d'Or back in the day. Messi always got it. People would be talking about, why have Xavi and Iniesta not? And they would come second or third. It was just always the goals. Always the goals, Chris.
Always the goals. And obviously, as we said, Ange got Manager of the Year. Fully deserved. Celtic versus St Mirren, Saturday.
Oofed.
3 p.m. kickoff.
Yep.
So this is, obviously, we've got three games left. We've got St Mirren on Saturday, we've got Hibs on Wednesday, and then we've got the game Aberdeen. Against Aberdeen, which will be great. We'll get the trophy and all that. It'll be class. This game's kind of like the Hibs game. You know, Hibs are fighting for, they still have a chance, a slim chance of European qualification. It's Easter Road, quite exciting. This game's kind of like, I don't know, there's not a lot of kind of pressure riding on it. Obviously, the defeat last week means we're probably not going to get the record points and all that. And that's kind of, I think everyone's kind of enthusiasm for that's kind of dropped off. No one really gives a fuck anymore. What you think? What are you feeling and thinking about this game? Would you go complete B team, or would you go, when I say B team, I mean actual, like, you know, squad team? Or, you know, we've got a cup final coming up as well, so people, you know, need to stay sharp. What's your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly it. We need to tick over until the cup final in terms of keeping players kind of match fit and things like that. So you can't make wholesale changes. You obviously monitor injury situations. Yeah. So a guy like Taylor's been kind of up and down in terms of picking up knocks. He obviously didn't start on at the weekend. And probably, well, I don't know if the reason for that was his fitness or more that they wanted to try Burnaby out. But you need to be mindful of things like that in terms of nursing them through, because that the cup final is there. You always want to have a look at some of the youth players. So, you know, Summers and Vata are really the youth players if we're talking about
potential.
So always be, I mean, I know Vata got some time, you know, obviously against Motherwell, and that was a pretty jaded performance. But at this time of the season, we are thinking, give them a shot, let's see what they've got. The league's done, it's won, it's in the bag. But at the same time, you don't want to make wholesale changes. St Mirren have performed really well against us at Celtic Park, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was a couple of games where, you know, the scoreline didn't actually reflect how the game played out. You know, it was only later when we made subs that we kind of, we pulled away. So, and, you know how we react to dropped points. So you need to treat them with proper respect. But at the same time, do what suits us in terms of our aims for the rest of the season. So for me, it would be a largely first choice team, sprinkled with a few other players, you know.
See, on that, would you, obviously the cup final's on the 3rd of June. Mm. looking at that game, would you, when would you, say like the Aberdeen game, the Aberdeen game's a funny one because it's kind of, it'll be more about like a kind of celebration, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, do you want to play the cup final team against Aberdeen? But my point being, as again, as we say about like the idea of it being like a sort of audition in a lot of ways for players to get into the cup final team, would you look at that and think, okay, if we're 4-0 up at half time, we'll make, you know, wholesale changes? Yeah.
That's the aim, yeah. I think. Again, you only go 100%. You're not looking to play the cup final team necessarily. But what you want to do is have it, you know, have enough of the players in there that you're going to play next week just to kind of tick them over and hopefully finish it off fairly early. I mean, Aberdeen, what, are they going to be playing for third still?
It just depends, the next two fixtures. They could have had third kind of confirmed.
So if they've got third confirmed, it's less of a, you know, it's less of an issue for both teams. So ideally, you would want to get a couple of goals, you know what, and then you can start to take players off. But it's more about match sharpness as opposed to, you know, wanting to go out there and, you know, perform hugely. If you, that's weird. I don't really know how to explain it. It really is a kind of just a game of squad management over the next three games to make sure nobody's injured before the cup final, but nobody's been sitting on their arse and isn't up to speed by the time we play it.
Yeah, just looking at, so here's the thing, Aberdeen are third, 54 points, Hearts are fourth, 49 points, so that's what, 5 points difference? The fixtures at the weekend, it's Hearts versus Aberdeen.
Right.
So, as an example, if Hearts win that game, that'll be what, they'll be 2 points behind them with two to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's all still to kind of play for, and so that last game of the season could be really competitive, unless Aberdeen win at the weekend, and then that'll be, what, 8 points. So, all but done, pretty much. Interesting. I mean, you know, would you look at, you know, like a guy like Sigrist?
Forgot about him.
I look at him and I think, what was really the point of that? Because Bain's been on the bench a lot this season. Like, what was the point of bringing him in?
I don't know. And there's all sorts of rumours. I mean, you've had a WhatsApp rumour about Sigrist fighting and all that, haven't you?
I haven't, no, tell me.
That was it. I don't know if that was a WhatsApp rumour or somebody said that to me. I mean, who knows? It's all alleged.
Allegedly.
Probably. I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, it is a strange one. There were points where you're thinking, is he injured? Or what? Has he been that bad in training? It's just a very strange one. Now, he was a guy I thought he was a competent or a half-decent shot stopper, but there's nothing about him that made me think, you're coming in here to challenge Hart.
No.
He just looked like total backup fodder. So he's another guy who you're like, if he goes, who cares, you know?
Yeah, quite an odd signing. Anyway, so we're playing St Mirren on Saturday. We'll look towards that at the weekend update, which records every Friday and is available at thecynic.co daily podcasts. So we've got a podcast on Sunday called The Biscuit Tin, which is our financial podcast, which kind of looks at the financial side of Celtic and Scottish football. And we'll have a reaction straight after the game against St Mirren on Saturday as well. So check that out. We'll look over the teams and stuff tomorrow as well. So we'll do a kind of lineup breakdown because at this point, you know, you could pick 1,000 different teams and you're just not going to know. What final point before we kind of finish up, would this point be a good time to play Hak Sabanovic on the left-hand side?
Well, you know what I'm going to say, Christopher.
Of course, and I'm going to feel exactly the same.
Yes.
Just play him on the left-hand side,
just
man.
Just play him.
Or just play him in the eight. Play him when he fucking wants. Just play him with his mad gold teeth things and all that. Shiny teeth.
I've seen
that. Wild, eh?
That was interesting. Bit of dental work, but he's a guy, you know, I'm a big fan of, you're a big fan of. He's not really shone when he's been given his chance, but the caveat to that is he's been put on the right-hand side of the front three. He's still a guy who I think's got immense talent, but he needs to step up and take his chances and prove that, like any player, like Abada, like other guys that we've talked about. So, yeah, for me, I would have him in on the left, starting on Saturday, and I'll be there. Pure watching.
Cheering him on.
Aye.
Did you get your cup final ticket?
I did indeed.
Where are you sitting? Didn't have to give me the exact seating in.
I can't remember now.
We were in the Rangers end. Me, Boud, and Andy McCaffrey.
How did you log in late?
I said to Boud, Boud's like, I'll get the ticket for you. I was like, all right. And I was sitting, I was sending him messages at 9:59 saying, right, remember the tickets go on sale? Nah, it's fine.
You're there. That's all.
Yeah,
that really
that's the most important thing.
Can't remember. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But aye, it'll be good. Be heavy minted. June, Scottish Cup final day for a treble.
A few pints, a few laughs.
That's it.
Half five. Boozer.
Boozer.
obviously, it's a huge monumental game for Celtic FC women. They take on Hearts at Celtic Park on Sunday, 10 past four kickoff. At the same time, Rangers are taking on Glasgow City. From a points perspective, Celtic need to win. If Celtic win and Rangers win, it goes down to goal difference. If Celtic win and Glasgow City win, then Glasgow City win the league. So what we need is basically Glasgow City and Rangers to either Rangers to win,
ooh,
or them to draw, and then all Celtic have to do is pure score 40 billion goals. Looking forward to it. Should be amazing. That the game the other week was fantastic as well.
Mind that time we went to Tynecastle and get beat 3-0 when Hearts were going for second?
Yes.
I think Rangers women's team might...
I disagree, and I'll tell you why. Because they can still win the league.
No, I know. I think it's Celtic and Rangers are on the same points, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
See, aye, I know.
You know. You're worrying about that.
Yeah, so that should be fantastic. There is, as I say, there's a Celtic Women's Football Show podcast, which records every Wednesday. We cover the Celtic FC Women's team every single week. I think we're the only podcast that do. So check that out. But the last 2 weeks podcast we've put out for free, so they're in your feed if you want to go back and listen to that and get the build-up for Sunday, which should be fantastic.
When's the cup final, the women's cup final?
Cup final's the week after.
Right.
And that's at Hampden as well, and that's Celtic versus Rangers. So can you imagine going into that cup final, having won the league, will be absolutely stupendous. Final question is from Ian. Do you see the Celtic end becoming a reality? After seeing the videos from the Celtic women's game, it really brings something different to the game, and I would love to see it happen, but I just don't see the club going for it. So, as I say, we were there last week. We'll be there on Sunday as well. What did you make of the kind of scenes, the videos and all that? How do you think it would work? Do you think it would ever happen?
It looked great, didn't it? It was, and the team were getting right into it as well. And you just kind of the kind of thrash of bodies behind the goal going absolutely mental. It looked fantastic. I suppose in terms of that being implemented,
it's not going to happen, is it?
I don't think it's going to happen. Certainly not in the short or medium term. I suppose it's a long-term goal, perhaps. And that you can give you a taste of, you know, what it might be like. And it might be that there's going to be more women's games at Celtic Park as well. And obviously the boys in the Green Brigade turned up to show some support and will probably continue to do that. So who knows? It might be one of these things where it gets bigger.
Just you momentum know, just takes
the momentum sort of thing. But it's not going to happen just now. And, you know, it becomes difficult for all these things because there's guys that have sat in seats for 25 years and all this sort of stuff, and I'm not moving.
I know.
And so logistically, it's very difficult, and it will be very difficult. But who knows? It's not happening soon, but I wouldn't rule it out happening at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to Sunday, looking forward to Saturday. We're at the home stretch for this season, but podcasts every day, of course. As I say, we've got the weekend update tomorrow with Christian. We'll look at some of the transfer targets, and we'll look ahead to the St Mirren game as well in a little bit more detail. We'll do a opposition analysis and such. Saturday, we've got the reaction to the game, and then on Sunday, we've got the biscuit tin, which will look at the financial side of Celtic and Scottish football. Podcast every day, get involved, thecynic.co. We're also on Twitter at 90minutescynic. We're on Instagram at 90minutescynic as well. So check us out. Christopher Samani, it's been an absolute joy. A pleasure.
Wonderful. Very intimate. Let's blow the candles out and go.
We'll have our third panelist next week. I believe it's Barry Gallagher. So should be great. From Chris Samani. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Chris Gallagher, and this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.